latest edition of the Shoot the Right Show on 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford, Tufts, Bee Farm Radio. Glad to be here with you on another Saturday edition of the Shoot the Right Show, wherever you may be, however you may be listening. Thank you for making the show part of your day. Always appreciated. And we are here back with you today from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. on 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford, as well as you can stream the radio show on the TuneIn Radio app. We have a lot to get into today over the course of the next hour, and we are going to get started right away by talking about the return of sports. Because let's face it, you and I, as sports fans, and especially being a sports talk radio host, we miss sports. Sports is an absolute integral part of our lives and part of what I do as well, and part of who I am, frankly. And to be honest with you, the talk of sports returning excites me, but it worries me. I'm going to tell you why it excites me. It excites me because I miss sports, just like a human being. A human being would miss his favorite dessert or sweets when he's been deprived or she's been deprived. But the fact of the matter is, sports returning, especially during these times, would mean so much, especially in both the short term and as well as the long term, while understanding and accepting that nothing will ever be the same, at least early on. But I will also tell you why it worries me, the return of sports, because right now we are living in a time where there is no vaccine for the coronavirus, unfortunately, at least as of yet. While the excitement of seeing something live, especially a live sporting event on TV, would thrill me and so forth, but there's a level of concern in which that, what would it look like and what would it entail and so forth. And there was an interesting article that came out yesterday, and it was written by Kevin Paul DuPont of the Boston Globe in terms of the NHL. And I want to talk about this because it was written on May 21st, in which the title is called Bruins on Ice Next Week. Tentative NHL plan is practiced by June and playoffs around July. And there was something that he wrote, and I want to read to you an excerpt from the column in the article, in which that he talks about how it impacted the Bruins in terms of their ability to return back to practice, because right now the practice facility for both the Bruins and Celtics are closed because they're right next to each other in Brighton, but neither team has access and the ability to be able to hit the practice ice due to the restrictions here in the city. So here's what Paul DuPont wrote in the article. It talks about the NHL returning and so forth. Quote, the plan being forged between the league and the NHL Players Association and subject to modification currently is aimed at getting players back on the ice for small group practice sessions as early as late next week or by June 1st. Union player reps from the 31 teams voted on the proposed playoff format late Thursday evening. The league and Players Association will likely make the results public on Friday. The Bruins, who would hope to set up shop at the Brighton training facility, if permissible under the city's restrictions, will start back with multiple daily skating sessions, each workout group limited to 6 players and accompanying on-ice coaching staff. In all NHL cities, it could take as many as 4 such sessions a day for all players to practice, ultimately leading to the start of a full training camp in mid-June. That piece there is important because one would think, well, how is practice going to be held? How are the players going to get back into training shape? And all of those questions are fair and legitimate. But also the question really would come down to is, how will each team in each city deal with the restrictions set by the local government due to the coronavirus? And as I mentioned, the Celtics, they can't even get back into their practice facility, at least just as of yet. The Bruins, under the same situation as well. And both practice facilities are here in the city of Boston. So I wonder if they're talking about players getting back on the ice by June 1st and so forth. And currently here in Massachusetts, we are under phase one of the reopening phase and so forth. We just don't know at what point is Mayor Marty Walsh going to say, hey, you know what? Everything's continued to progress. You are clear to return to practice, but under these strict guidelines. Which is why I say, if you are the NHL, you have to examine this on a city-by-city, case-by-case standpoint. Because some cities are worse than others right now at this current point in time. That's a fact. Boston in itself has gotten a lot better in terms of the daily testing, the cases, and so forth. It's gotten a lot better. And the state has made strides as well. But it does come down to where each team is located, in which city, because it's not the same situation for every team. Now think about this. Let's use New York, for example. You got the Rangers, you got the Islanders. And New York has been one of the hardest, if not the hardest, hit state in the nation in terms of the coronavirus pandemic. And neither team are able to, as of this current moment in time, able to hit the ice at their respective training locations. So it does leave me to wonder, how will this all work out for all 31 NHL teams in terms of getting back on the ice, begin training for training camp, and as well as making sure that they're ready to go if the Stanley Cup playoffs were to be played on schedule in July. That's also the big point here. And I think it's important that I also point out this very factor as well. If you're the Boston Bruins, how would you even divvy up the practice sessions among skating groups? Which group would skate with whom? How would it work? What would it look like? And I think that's something that once we get to that point, we'll worry about that. But for right now, it's definitely something that is creating a great sense of curiosity on my end. What would it look like with social distancing and so forth? With the safety protocols that I'm sure it will be in place. No one knows. No one knows for sure. But I am excited to see the prospects of sports returning. Because we all know we are all starving for sports. We're starving for sports like a lion is starving for its meal. That's a fact. And I'm excited to see how this all will come into place. Now, the whole thing of 24 teams in the Stanley Cup playoffs, honestly, it's insane. It really is. The more I think about it, the more I really think, is this really going to be a good idea for 24 teams to be in the playoffs? So teams that are on the bubble or were on the bubble, they would get in. Like, for example, a team like Montreal, the Montreal Canadiens, if they were to get into the playoffs via this format, it would be one of the more strange instances as to, well, how on earth do we explain the Montreal Canadiens getting into the playoffs? And then, God forbid, if they happen to meet up with the Boston Bruins in the first round, after they get out of the Robin play, that the NHL is looking or considering putting into play. And that'll be something that'll be very interesting to see how it all unfolds and so forth. One of the things that I'm most excited about, especially as we get closer to to June is the NHL and its prospects of returning. But there's so many question marks league-wide, and not just only in terms of the Boston Bruins, but in terms of how the playoff format would even look like. What would it entail? One of the things that I do know is this. No matter what happens and how it all returns, none of this will be even remotely normal at all. The fact of 24 teams competing in the Stanley Cup playoffs is something that's completely foreign to everyone in hockey. I mean, let's face it, that's just a fact. But the fact of the matter is this. Who would be those 24 teams? And that's something that I can't even help but to wonder as to how would this work? 24 teams in the Stanley Cup playoffs. I know it sounds weird because we're used to having 16. Eight in the East, eight in the West. But now you have to add four more teams on each conference? So that's eight, exactly. So if you want to look at the standings, for example, you look at the possible teams who would be in the playoffs if it were to be played. We know that the Bruins would be, for sure. You got Washington, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Carolina, Columbus, the Islanders, and the Rangers. Boston, Tampa Bay, Toronto, Florida, Montreal. That's just some of the teams that I'm using as an example, but it would just be really strange all the way around. Like, here's the part that's even hilarious. Even if that ended up being the case, Buffalo would still miss the playoffs. And that in the part, it's sad. No matter how you slice and dice it, that's the part in which that would be the most comical to me, is Buffalo still missed the playoffs and they expanded the amount of playoff teams for this particular year. How do you explain that? I mean, I look at a team like the New York Rangers in particular, because the Rangers are a very fascinating case and so forth, in which they would be one of those teams on the bubble that would have to play in that Robin tournament, in which that they would have, in the very least, the opportunity to compete for the Stanley Cup playoffs. But the Rangers are not the only team in particular in which that they would, in the very least, have the opportunity to compete for the Stanley Cup, although under very different and strange circumstances. You look at Columbus, for example. But Columbus was already a firm team that was in the playoffs already as is. That's the funny part. And even if you look at the wildcard standings and so forth, Carolina and Columbus held the top two in the East. And in the West, it was Winnipeg and Nashville in terms of the top two spots in the wildcard. So it really would be fascinating to see how the NHL in the end, and by the way, all of this is just speculation. No one knows anything for sure right now. That's a fact. But I'm interested to see how this would all work, because as strange as this may be, if it does come to fruition, it will be one of the strangest things that we've seen in this sport probably ever. But these are very unique set of circumstances. So there has to be an exception to every rule, and I guess this would be the exception to every rule. Coming up next, why Major League Baseball needs to get its head out of its rear end. And I'm getting really fed up and frustrated with the way that they are handling this situation in terms of returning to play. All of that and much more coming up next on the Sugar Wright Show at 91.5 FM, WMFO in Memphis. This is Shukri Wright. You are listening to 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio.
up, here's the story about a little guy that lives in a blue world. And all day and all night, and everything he sees is just blue, like him inside and outside. Blue his house with a blue little window and a blue Corvette, and everything is blue for him and himself and everybody around, 'cause he ain't got nobody to listen.
Welcome back to the Shukri Wright Show on 91.5 FM, WMFO in Medford, Tufts Free Farm Radio. Before I continue with the show, it is time for PSA. The PSA is brought to you by 91.5 FM, WMFO in Medford, Tufts Free Farm Radio, and this is presented by the Ad Council. Social distancing slows the spread of the coronavirus. So if you have a fever, dry cough, and shortness of breath, call your healthcare provider before going in. More info at coronavirus.gov. Let's all do our part because we are all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council. So in continuation with the show, I was talking about before we went to a music break that Major League Baseball is starting to get me really annoyed with how they are handling this whole thing. Especially when we talk about how the sport, they have obstacles, frankly, in terms of being able to return back to play. And there is concern to be had. And there is an example that I want to use in particular as it pertains to the players and how they are bickering with the owners in terms of revenue share and how much money that they're going to get Now, in case if you may have heard, there is a comment that was made by Blake Snell, the left-handed pitcher for the Tampa Bay Rays, in which basically created a firestorm and the response by the fans and even the media was pretty swift. It was pretty swift and it was pretty clear that it was very much tone deaf. Blake Snell basically said, on quote, that I want what's mine. I'm not coming back just to take a pay cut and so forth. He said a lot more than that. But my thing when I heard that was this. This is the kind of comment and response from a well-off, well-paid athlete that comes across as tone deaf. And it pissed me off because when I hear this and I say to myself, well, what about the people who are unemployed right now? What about the people who don't know when and where their next meal is going to come from? What about the people who are in such far worse dire straits and you, this rich, self-entitled athlete, is not willing to take a pay cut? Now, I'm not saying that this player or players in general should just take a pay cut and, you know, just go out there and play for the love of the game. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that don't go on to any social media platform, whether it be Twitch, Instagram, or wherever else, and start complaining about, oh, we have to take less money to return back to play. Come on. I get that you're human too. And I'm not saying that you're not, and that your safety and your life and your well-being should not be taken into consideration. All those things should be 100%. But don't start complaining about, oh, I'm not returning if I have to take a pay cut. No. Like, seriously, everybody's taking a loss. Everybody, financially, the sports leagues, they're all taking hits. The owners, they're all taking hits. That's the harsh truth of this. And if you have this self-entitled idea, then fine. But then understand and don't complain about the backlash that you're getting from it as well. Now, in terms of the players and the owners, in this situation, I'm going to take the side of the owners. Because let's face it, this league, Major League Baseball, has become so player-driven over the last 25-plus years that in some ways, the owners have lost control, in some ways, of the sport. Think about it. If you think about the 94 strike, and you think about the 25 years of labor peace that Major League Baseball has enjoyed up until this point now, you tell me that the players have taken complete control over the game of baseball. I think they have in more ways than one. I'm going to give you an example. Pace of play. Between 1994 and up till now, until 2019, the average time per game has gotten worse. Go look it up. I'm serious. It's gotten worse. Like, you know, people have complained for the last few years now, well, the game has gotten too slow for me. It's become even harder for me to really enjoy. I get it. And I'm a hardcore baseball fan. I don't mind sitting at a ballpark for three and a half hours at a time to enjoy a nine-inning game. That's not a problem. But the fact of the matter is that the players have a lot to do with that, not the owners. That's just one example. So my whole thing will be is this. Is that if you are the owners right now, this is your opportunity to take control of the game. And here's why. Because I feel like the owners at this point in juncture, they have got the most to lose. They really do. You think about how bad and how severe this economic impact is going to be on Major League Baseball, but not just Major League Baseball, but across all sports and even the economy in itself, it's going to be pretty bad. It's going to be awful. But if you also go a little deeper than that and you think about for a moment, hey, the owners are they're taking pay cuts in a way. They're losing revenue and so forth. But the players, in more ways than one, I just feel like they have become more and more entitled. And it's sick. This is their opportunity to take back that control. And oh, by the way, the CBA is about to expire, which means they're going to need to absolutely find a way to get that CBA done and agreed upon. Otherwise, baseball is heading back for another strike. It's not inevitable at all. Baseball hasn't had a strike since 94, and although I was too young to remember that, but I do know this. The next negotiations for the collective bargaining agreement in Major League Baseball is going to get nasty. And it makes matters worse is that this pandemic doesn't help matters at all financially. The players want their share of the pie. The owners, they want their share of the pie. Guess what? Everybody's taking losses, both the owners and the players. There's no way around it. None at all. And the part that makes me sick is this. You have guys like Blake Snell who came out and said what he said. He has a right to his opinion. I'm not going to take that away from him at all. But I do know this. When you think about the collective mindset of the players and everything that goes into the financial aspect of the game of baseball, I don't blame them for wanting to take as much as they possibly can in terms of how much money they can make, and I'm with them. But if you really think about this for a second, the idea that the owners are taking back control terrifies them. It does. But in this situation, I'm talking about in this particular situation, given the pandemic and the economic fallout from all of this, it's going to be pretty high. It's going to be way up there. More than you and I will ever know or even begin to really fathom. Can baseball avoid another standoff? We'll see. But will baseball be back in 2020? I don't know. And right now, it's not looking good. Because frankly, the players, the coaching staff, I mean, Tim Kirchner really said it best. It's really a 50-50 coin toss in terms of a response. It is. There isn't an overwhelming majority that's saying, oh, yay, let's go. Let's do this. Yeah. There isn't an overwhelming majority that's like, oh my God, heck no. I'm not for this. Screw this. I'm not partaking in this. And my safety is jeopardized? Absolutely not. Neither of which is the dominant opinion in the sport right now. So the harsh truth is this. Major League Baseball's got a problem on its hand. And it's not just only coronavirus. It's not only just that. It's the economic fallout, and as well as when it comes time to negotiate a new CBA, don't be surprised that this pandemic and the effects of the pandemic will have a lot to do with it, because all of it is tied in together of some sort. And sooner than later, they will all due. They are all due to come to the table and hash it all out. And what better time to do that than now? Major League Baseball, you have a lot to lose. A lot to lose. If you do not handle this carefully, especially if you are not careful with how the players come to the bargaining table and as well as the owners. So this is my call out to Commissioner Manfred as to step in between and figure this thing out. Get it together. Because if you don't, the fallout from all of this is going to be worse than 94. Way worse. I hope there's baseball this season. I really do. For my own personal sake. But the fact of the matter is this. The way that things are going right now, we don't know. There's a lot of unknowns right now. We'll have to wait and see as to how this all plays out. And then go from there. That's all you could really hope for and ask for. as a sports fan. Coming up next, I want to share with you my thoughts on the Jordan documentary. I have a lot to say about it. And I want to talk about that plus much more coming up next on the Shukri Wright Show on 91.5 FM, WMFO in Medford. This is Shukri Wright. You are listening to 91.5 FM, WMFO in Medford in the TuneIn Radio app. Tusk Reform Radio.
Hey.
Welcome back to the Shukri Wright Show on 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford, Tufts Free Farm Radio. Before I continue, I want to go over a couple of housekeeping notes pertaining to the Shukri Wright Show. As a reminder, you can listen to this show on demand as a podcast on iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. I made the announcement last week on the Shukri Wright Show. In case if you may have missed it, I just wanted to remind you, the listener, that you can listen to this and all future broadcasts of the Shukri Wright Show on 91.5 FM WMFO on iHeartRadio as a podcast, as well as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts as well. So just wanted to pass that note along and remind you as well. Hope you are having a marvelous Memorial Day weekend, wherever you may be, however you may be listening and so forth. And during this segment, I want to talk about the Jordan documentary, because this has been a phenomenal five Sundays. Not just listening, but watching the documentary in its entirety. And every Sunday night for the last 5 weeks certainly has been an absolute thrill and a joy to just watch. And I gotta tell you, one thing that I really have enjoyed the most about watching the documentary is watching some of the things that I've already knew about, that I knew about Michael Jordan, but more importantly, learning things about him that I never knew, like the relationship that he had with his father, his mom, his upbringing. And how, and especially in the first episode, talking about the impact of him, you know, not making the team, like while he was in high school. I'm trying to remember if it was his junior year, or I think it was his junior year, if I'm correct, yes, it was his junior year, and how that impacted him and so forth. And one of the things that I really loved about the documentary was just really getting into the mind of what made MJ so great, you know, and as well as equally as importantly, talking about the other players like Scottie Pippen, his background, Dennis Rodman, his background, and so forth. You know, like you're getting to know the other core pieces of that Chicago Bulls dynasty in the 90s, including Phil Jackson. Heck, I didn't even know that he's from Montana. I thought that was actually pretty cool. And if anything that I've learned about this is that he really does have a strong basketball background. He talked about his mom and his upbringing in church and so forth. And the documentary talked about, you know, his days with the New York Knicks, him having to go down to Puerto Rico to get started with his coaching career. And I didn't even know that he won championships as a head coach in some sort of a basketball tournament or basketball league in upstate New York in the 80s. So all in all, he's a flat out winner. You know, obviously we all know about the Jordan years, and as well as the Kobe and Shaq years in LA, and even subsequently the Kobe years, like in 09 and in 2010, winning back to back titles on with the Lakers and so forth. So I'll tell you this much. One thing that I've enjoyed about Phil Jackson throughout this documentary is you really got to see him in a whole different limelight as to why he was so successful with great players. The notion of, well, anybody could have coached those great teams and so forth is completely false. It takes a special type of coach and a legendary type of coach to be able to say, hey, you know what? I'm going to need you to all put your ego aside and really focus on the betterment of the team and focus on the one thing that only matters, and that's what? Winning. And that's all that was all about what came to Phil Jackson at the end of the day. Like, I really like the fact how in one episode they talked about how Jordan was instructed during a timeout by coach Phil Jackson, saying Paxson is open, get him the ball. And Jordan finally listened and gave John Paxson the ball, and he was making those wide open buckets. And I tell you, like, when seeing that kind of stuff really got me thinking, like, wow, this is actually pretty neat. And I really enjoyed watching so many little things about Jordan and his and the details that went into this documentary. And, you know, one great thing that I really loved about it in itself was, if you really think about it, for five Sundays, it was absolute must-see TV. I'm serious. I'm going to give you an actual case in point. When I knew it was Sunday and it was going to be the Jordan documentary on ESPN that night, I basically told people, I was like, listen, hit me up after. Don't bother me. I'm serious. I will not answer. I will not respond. Do not bother me. Like, I know it sounds like I was being a complete prick, but no, this really was must-see TV, and it was. And frankly, it surpassed all expectations that I had for the documentary by far. I didn't expect it to be this incredible. I mean, I thought it would be pretty good, but to say that it was pretty good, it's doing it a disservice. It was actually way better than that. It was incredible. And the one thing I want to point out is this. Jerry Krause, in the way that he was portrayed in the documentary. Listen, I hated Jerry Krause by the end of episode one. I'm going to be honest with you. I really did. And kudos to ESPN and the Jordan documentary company that helped put together this documentary and so forth. The fact that that man inexplicably decided that he was going to completely tear apart the team at the end of the 97-98 season. And frankly, I didn't understand that. And even now, as I sit here, as I talk about it, if he was still alive, Jerry Krause, unfortunately, he passed away in 2017. I'd ask him, why? Why did you feel the need to not bring the team back after winning a sixth NBA title in 8 years? I'd love to know this. Was it your ego? Or was it the fact that you couldn't handle the fact that you weren't getting the praise that you felt that you deserved? You want to talk about having a classic case of Napoleon syndrome? That was it. And I'm not here to piss on a man's grave, because I would never ever do something like that. But frankly, the way that he was portrayed, especially in the way that he handled the whole Scottie Pippen situation, it really was just like, are you kidding me? Like, how do you go from criminally giving Scottie Pippen that 7-year, $18 million contract, which even in the 90s was criminally low, but in today's standard, oh, hell no. Like, no way. An NBA player took that kind of contract and Scottie Pippen did that to himself. He was even told, don't take that contract. He was told not to take that contract, and he did. But the fact of the matter is, when you look at Scottie Pippen and you look at Jerry Krause, I look at Jerry Krause and I say to myself, you had an ego and you had a problem and you were not willing to look past that ego. And you took apart what could have been an extra 2, maybe 3 years of a Bulls dynasty. And Jordan himself came out and said that, you know what, I'm not feeling the fact that Jerry Krause did what he did. I'm still flabbergasted that he decided to trade away Scottie Pippen or release Dennis Rodman and not bring Phil Jackson back. Because remember, MJ had married himself to Phil Jackson. Truth, yes. Because he impacted him that much as a head coach. And frankly, I just think that it was one of the worst moves made in the history of sports, of professional sports at that. You talk about breaking up one of the great dynasties in pro sports. That was it. That was absolutely it. And I just thought that the documentary itself was just riveting on so many levels. When you talk about, I talked about Scottie Pippen, the Jerry Krause thing, and the Phil Jackson and so forth. And there's just so many little things about the documentary that I was just like, oh my God, this is absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible to watch. One of my personal favorite parts about it I have to go with when they talked about the quote unquote flu game. And there was so much myth to it and so forth. It wasn't the flu, it was food poisoning. That's what it was, as it turned out to be. And I gotta tell you, I couldn't believe it when I saw the story of how it all like impacted everything and so forth. Especially when you talk about, for a guy who had played through just about everything you can imagine, and now he was sick. He was sick as a dog. And I gotta tell you, for him to go out and to impose his will in that game, in game 5 of the 1997 NBA Finals, was amazing. Was truly amazing. Talk about scoring 38 points, and he did not look good in the first half of that game. Ooh, incredible. Coming up next, I'm going to provide you my final thoughts for this show, and as well as talk about the similarity that I see in terms of what Jerry Krause did with the Chicago Bulls and what is happening now with the New England Patriots. Final thoughts coming up next on the Shukri Wright Show on 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford. This is Shukri Wright. You are listening to 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Shukri Wright Show on 91.5 FM, WMFO, and Medford Tufts Free Farm Radio. Quick thoughts on the comparison between what Jerry Krause did to dismantle the Chicago Bulls dynasty and what's happening now. I think the one similarity that I see was his ego. Definitely ego in the case of Jerry Krause. And there's definitely some sort of ego with Bill Belichick in terms of not wanting to bring back Tom Brady. And although it was mutual, I think, but I do think ego had a lot to do with Belichick not wanting to bring back Brady and offering the contract that he did in August of last year and so forth. So egos are definitely the number one way in which dynasties end in sports. And at the end of the day, maybe it's for the better, maybe it's for the worse. And sometimes the grass isn't always greener on the other side. That's just a fact. So I do think that ultimately we'll never know how much more could have been accomplished due to ego, but there are lessons to be learned from all of this. And that, my friends, is exactly how we lose the greatness that we enjoy due to the inability to put aside pride and so forth. Just want to go over a couple quick programming notes and pertaining to the Shukri Wright Show before I sign off and so forth. Next week, again, same time as always, Saturday, 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. on 91.5 FM, WMFO in Medford, as well as the TuneIn radio app. And as always, you will be able to listen to all broadcasts of the Shukri Wright Show on 91.5 FM, WMFO in Medford, on iHeartRadio, on demand as a podcast after the broadcast has been completed. So if you happen to miss the live broadcast of the show, it's okay. It's all good. It's available. It will be all available as podcast as a Shukri Wright's podcast folder on iHeartRadio, as well as the Apple Podcast, Spotify, and as well as Google Podcast. So to all of you who have plans for the Memorial Day weekend, have an absolute blast. Be safe. Enjoy all the barbecuing, because let's face it, this weekend is going to be marvelous. And I'm excited. The warmer weather is here. Is here to stay, although we will have a couple of days of, you know, cooler weather, but summer is just about here, folks. I don't know about you, and I know there's a lot going on with the pandemic and so forth, but you know what? Get out and enjoy and be smart. Protect yourself. Practice social distancing. If you're going to socialize with friends and so forth, wear a mask and whatnot. Go for a walk. Enjoy the sunshine. It's a lot to do out there. Don't let this pandemic get you down. You know, you have the ability to make the most of it. Do it. Look to the positive. There's a lot of positives that you can draw from this. It's not all doom and gloom, you know. It's about perspective. And at the end of the day, utilizing the opportunity that you have in front of you to do some really awesome stuff and so forth. Until next week, it's been an absolute blast, as always, being back on the airwaves. On 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford and TuneIn Radio app. This is your man Shukri Writes. Catch me on the podcast. New episode, by the way, coming out next week. There is two actually coming out next week. Cam Connors is joining the podcast next week, and as well as my good friend Salim Nadeem Valji of the New York Times. He's a contributor as well for the New York Times. He's going to join the podcast as well. So look out for new episodes of the Shukri Writes podcast coming next week. So until then, look forward to talking with all of you furthermore. I'll talk to you guys again next week on the Shukri Writes show. You can catch me on the podcast on iHeartRadio, Apple, Spotify, and Google Podcast. This is Shukri Writes. You're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford. Happy Memorial Day. Happy Memorial Day weekend. Stay safe and be safe. Peace.
Due to COVID-19, WMFO DJs are pre-recording their shows for broadcast on air. We can still accept phone calls, but the phone line is in voicemail mode. Call 855-915-9636 and be sure to leave the DJ's name in the voicemail so we can forward it to the correct person. The following program was recorded earlier. Enjoy.